session number 28500, reel 5.
But that was no problem because it was on a tripod, and therefore you don't have to fit it into your shoulder, take a proper aim and squeeze the trigger. And so it hadn't the same difficulty that you had with the rifle, you know. But that all took place at the Black Dog ranges.
And was it just one man who operated one of those guns, or did you work in a team then?
Well, you could have an assistant with you whose job was to change the magazines. So you were a one-man affair, really, but you could also have someone with you to change the magazines quickly, because you had the magazines all in a box, and when one was expended, you placed on the other one, and the chap with the machine gun could then fire the next one. You see? So it was really a twin thing.
And what about anti-tank guns? Were you dealing with those?
No, that didn't come into training at all, anti-tank. That was done in special training, you know, later. Once you had done your recruit training, then there was cases where they had squads who taught the anti-tank rifle. Yeah. But that wasn't a good one. It was the boys, anti-tank, and I don't know who Mr. Boys was, but anyhow, it caused an awful lot of problems, because if it wasn't held properly, you got a damaged shoulder. And that happened quite often. And of course that had to go to Black Dog also, out to the big range to fire it. But that was the boys' anti-tank. And that was the only one that the infantry, you know, were trained with, the boys' anti-tank.
Okay. And whilst you were still in this 6 weeks period, you know, in this basic training, were you being taught like any unit identity, you know, were they giving you the history of the unit or anything that...
Oh yes, that happened quite often. Once a week there was a period allotted to the history of the Gordon Highlanders, and also to tell you about the different battalions, the Gordon Highlander battalions, and where they were, what they were doing, and that was part of the recruit training. And then there was also the training, the lectures on APCA, which was the things that were happening in the world, different things, and it was a history too. And that was the two main things, the APCA training and the Gordon Highlander training. And that was just lectures by officers usually, telling you what was happening in the different spheres.
And do you think that built up a loyalty, you know, from yourself towards the regiment?
Oh yes, that that was most essential, because in Scottish regiments, the whole thing is history. It goes back a long time, and the affiliation of all the different peoples, for example, the Gordon Highlanders, northeast of Scotland, Banffshire, Aberdeenshire, and Cardinshire, and that was the hunting ground of the Gordon Highlanders. Then you had the Seaforth Highlanders, and the Cameron Highlanders, and the Argyll and Southern Highlanders, and the Black Watch at Perth. And they all had their own areas, and the loyalties, and it was the same all through, you know. Your regiment was the finest regiment in the British Army, and you couldn't say anything else. But that was taught quite often, yeah. And it certainly engendered this feeling of loyalty to the regiment, and most essential.
And was it just your own regiment you were hearing about, or were they explaining, you know, about the different regiments within Scotland as well?
Well, you were taught where all the different regiments operated, you know, especially in Scotland, and also a bit of history about some of them, so that you got a general idea of where they took the recruits and so forth, and all that sort of thing. And that was taught quite often, yeah.
And for yourself and the Gordon Highlanders, you were brought up in Aberdeen, or near Aberdeen, but you'd also been working up in Huntly, I believe.
Huntly, yes.
So did that split your loyalty for the Gordon Highlanders?
Oh yes, because Huntly was one of the main Gordon Highlander stations, you see. Keith was the starting point of the 6th Battalion, and Huntley, of course, was part. All these towns had were associated with the Gordon Highlanders in Aberdeenshire and Barshire.
So, which one did you really feel the most affinity to? Was it Aberdeen or was it to Keith and Huntley?
Well, to me, it was Aberdeen because having been taught at the Gordon Barracks and having served at Gordon Barracks. I mean, Gordon Barracks was, to me, was the real centre of the training of the Gordon Highlanders, as we were at that time. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And can you remember any of the officers or non-commissioned officers that were training you during your first 6 weeks?
Oh, yes. I think I showed you this before, but... the one I showed you before, remember? You see a Sergeant Major and a Lance Corporal. Okay. And that was the only two instructors we had. Okay. So short of instructors.
Okay. Now, this is a picture with the Sergeant Major and the... Sorry, was it the...
There's a Sergeant Major here with the Glengarry, and there's the Lance Corporal there with the... next to him.
Okay.
And that was the only two we had.
Okay. They both look almost identical in dress. Obviously, just apart from one or two badges.
That's right. Well, that's the Sergeant Major's badge there on his sleeve, and the Lance Corporal's got his one stripe on his shoulder.
Okay. And why would he have had on a different hat as well? Why would the...
Oh, well, being a Sergeant Major, he was allowed to wear the Glengarry. You see, being a Sergeant Major, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And had you to reach a certain rank before you got there?
Yes, well...
You were allowed to wear that.
The Glengarry, of course... Pipe Barnes wore it, you see. But also at that time in the early part, they wore the Balmoral, which is the one there, that the headgear. That was the main thing. But then as the war went on, the Pipe Barnes wore the Glengarry, and the Sergeant Majors and the officers wore the Glengarry too. But you could also wear the Balmoral also, you see.
So the ones, the hats that the rest of you are wearing, would you call that a...
Balmoral.
Balmoral.
Balmoral, yep.
Could that also be called a tam o' shanter?
Tam o' shanter, yes, that's it.
Is it the same thing?
Same thing, yeah.
And was your cap badge on the side of it?
There's a badge on the side, the Gordon Highlanders badge on the left-hand side, you see.
And can you remember many of the people in this picture?
I do remember some of them, but it's such a long time ago.
And was this in your 6 weeks basic
training? I joined, that was my first platoon. As a recruit, yep. That was a recruit platoon. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll give you that one back. Thank you.
But it just shows you the difference in the dress and that. Time wore on, it changed, of course, various reasons. But that was the dress in 1940.
Thank you very much. And can you remember the type of relationships there was, between ranks, in this very early period, I'm meaning,
Yes, the... officers, what you found in the officers was that when you came into Gordon Barracks as a recruit, you didn't know anyone. The officers came from different parts, and they came from different areas. They wore the Gordon Highlander, the Balmoral or the Glengarry, whatever it was, but you didn't know anything about them. They were all strangers until you got acquainted with them and got to know their names and so forth. But that took a little time. And, of course, we had to concentrate also on the NCOs, the corporals, the sergeants and the lance corporals, who were the main ones that were dealing with recruits. The officers only appeared at intervals to inspect or to do something or to give a lecture on something. But the main ones that did all the hard work in the barracks was the NCOs, the sergeants, the corporals, and the lance corporals. They were the ones who taught the recruits what to do and all the various things.
And during your 6 weeks training, would it have been quite acceptable for you to maybe have gone up and spoken to an officer?
Oh, yes. Well, there was no restriction on that, no. And you found it usually very helpful in the beginning, you know, you found that. But well, there was no problem, you could go and speak to an officer at any time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you think during that 6 weeks period as well that there was ever any bullying by the more senior ranks towards the basic soldiers?
No. Or you maybe got one or two who were a bit noisy, you know, shouting a bit and that. You got that. But the majority, as time wore on, they realised that that didn't help training, you know, bullying or shouting or making a noise. It had to be done properly so that people respected you for what you did. But no, there wasn't much. You got the odd one now and again who used to get one or two from Glasgow and they were rather noisy characters. They were. But on the whole, it was very, very stable.
Okay. So you're now at the end of your 6 weeks training. And so what happened then, you know, your basic training? What happened when you'd finished the 6 weeks period?
Well, the recruits came in regularly into the Gorn barracks. And the same procedures went on again. You got another platoon and you carried on with them. You trained them and carried on and did their 4 weeks or 6 weeks and off they went. Then the next lot came in. So it was never ending. You were doing the same thing every month, you know. And it was amazing at that time, of course, they were coming in their thousands at the beginning of the war. And then gradually, as the years went on, it got less and less. But up to 1942, when I left the barracks, 1942, there was a tremendous amount of recruits coming in each month.
Mm-hmm. But at the end of your 6 weeks period, was there any form of celebration that this was your training finished? Do you know how later on they had passing out parades and that? Did you have
Yes. Every platoon had to pass out, you know. And that's when you saw the difference, when you remembered how they looked, you know, when they came in and how they looked now after their 6 weeks training. And it was good. And you felt good, you know, you felt you achieved something. You see the difference of them, smartness and able to march and looking good. And there was always passing out praise, there was always that. And then there would be a celebration in the NAFI, you know, usually before they were posted to their various units. It was sad in a way too, because you trained them for a month or 6 weeks and then off they went and you probably never saw them again for a long time. Although you did, as you went through the war, you caught up with some of them in the different places that you were, you know, and say, oh, remember Gordon Barracks, you remember this? It was good. It was good. But the camaraderie there was always good in the Gordons. Very proud of that. Mm-hmm.
And do you remember your passing out parade?
My first.
No, your passing out parade. Do you remember your one?
Oh, the passing out. Oh, yes, I remember that. It was quite a thing, because they formed, on that occasion, there was six platoons all formed up on the barrack square and marched, and it was good, and I was part of the number two platoon, I think it was. There were six of us, and all lined up, and they marched around with a pipe band and everything else too, and a lot of people came to see it, because they'd been told that there was a passing out parade, and of course officers came from Edinburgh and various other places to see it. And it was always a good quality on that occasion, yes.
And how many men were in a platoon?
Pardon?
How many men would be in a platoon?
Well, roughly about 20, 25, 30, roughly. You usually a platoon 25, 30 chaps. And you had six platoons all marching at the same time. So it was good, yeah.
And were your parents there to see you passing out?
My mother couldn't come, nor my father, but my sister and my brother came before he was called up. He was called up in 1941, so they came to see the passing out parade at Gordon Barracks, which was quite good. And my sister, she was called up in 1942. and went out and finished up on Field Marshal Montgomery's staff in Germany. Yeah. So they all served. They all served in the army.
And for your passing out parade, did you have on ceremonial dress that day?
No. It was just a typical battle dress, belt, and that. No equipment. No. Just a marching order. Just for marching. Yeah. So it was good. It was smart too. It was. And you got the RSM there, you know, standing, waiting, shouting out the orders, and then the officers would come and parade, and then the march took place round and round the square. It was good. But of course, things didn't go so well after that, for the simple reason that the command had decreed that the Cameronians and the Highland Light Infantry would also come to Gordon Barracks also. And that was a big mistake, because they were light infantry and their step was different. So therefore we couldn't be on the square at the same time if the Cameronians or the HLI were on the square, because they had a different time to us. So that was a mistake that and it's a pity it was allowed to happen. But that was the only difficulty. If you wanted to drill, you couldn't drill along with the other regiments that were there too. You had to get the square to yourself to drill your time. So that was what happened there. And it kind of spoiled the feeling in the barracks, because here we had the units with a different step, a different timing altogether to that. So therefore we couldn't march together, which is a pity. But then that's how it happened.
Was that after your passing out parade?
Oh yes, that came in 41, the end of 41, that the first units came into a Gordon Barracks, other than the Gordon. Sorry.
Okay. And you've mentioned there that they were light infantry.
Yeah.
Could you please describe to us what the difference between light infantry and what the Gordon Highlanders were?
Yes, well, because they were known as light infantry because of their step. Our pace was 120 to the minute, which is quite a slow pace because it was a kilt. It was a kilt pace, and the others were fast, much, much faster, you see. So therefore, they had what was known as a light infantry step, so that we couldn't march with them at the same time. Hopeless.
I thought it might have something to do with equipment.
No, it was a step. It was a step. And it was rather funny because when you were doing guard mounting, the Gordon's time, you know, 120 to the minute, nice and steady, and suited the pipe band and the pipe music. But when the Cameronians in HLI were going at the gallop, of course the pipes couldn't play to them, you see, the speed that they were going at. So it looked a bit stupid when they were marching. But,
now you've mentioned the pipe band, and we associate the Gordon Highlanders with pipers. Could you tell us what part that the pipe band and pipers played, you know, within your training?
Oh yeah, well, it all set tunes, you see, for the different parades, and the you knew exactly what the tunes would be, you know, at the various times, and it was just a set procedure with that. But everybody knew what the tunes would be and why they were being played, you know. So. But of course, the pipe band made all the difference to the marching. You see, I mean, it's the music was good, and the bearing was good, and the soldiers marched well, and it looked good. Oh yes.
So, did you associate a certain tune with a certain way of marching?
Yes. Well, of course the pipe tunes were all played to the same time, the 120 to the minute. You see, so there was no problem with that. But The difference in the tunes was all the different pipe tunes. You had to learn that as you went on. There was the pipe tunes for the commanding officer's parade. There was the pipe tunes for the valet, the pipe tunes for last post, and the pipe tunes for lights out. And they were all different tunes, and you knew them, and you had to learn them. And you could tell when the pipe tunes for rations when the quartermaster was dishing out the rations for the day, the tune was played on the on the pipes. So everything was done by the pipes.
And do you recall now which tunes were for which activity?
Oh yes, well you could tell mostly the ones, because you knew some of the words in it, and you knew what it was. It was either the CEO's office or the whatever was being played. You got to know it, but you had to listen to it, and you get a piper. Now and again, you'd get a parade where you got a piper, and he would play the tunes. And you say, now that's what's played when it's Russians, that's what's played when the CEO's office, and that's so you knew exactly what tune it was and why it was being played. And of course, if you had to take part in it, you had to get off at the double to be at the place on time as soon as the pipe started. But it was good fun. It was.
So at the end of your 6 weeks period, what happened to you then?
Oh, nothing. No. I was made a lance corporal. That was a one stripe, the same as the chap there, one stripe. And that was 1940, one stripe. And at the beginning of 1941, I was made a full corporal, two stripes. And the 2 months later, after being made a corporal, I was made a sergeant. So that's what I finished up with at Gordon Barracks in 1942, 2 years after I had joined as a sergeant. Then I went to, was posted down to near London in preparation for going to be commissioned in the officers training corps in the west of Scotland, in the west of England rather, the west of England, which was 163 Octo, and that was at Morecambe Beach. So I had spent all the winter of 41 in the at Morecambe, and in March 43 I was commissioned second lieutenant and posted back to Gordon Barracks as an instructor again. So they were still short of instructors, as you can see. And that was what happened. 42, they posted south to go to the 163 Octo at Morecambe. And in March 43, a second lieutenant posted back to Gordon Barracks.
Can I go back to just after your basic training? Mm-hmm. Was it almost immediately that you were made a lance corporal?
I was made a lance corporal before I had finished my initial training. I was made a lance corporal then, and then followed on with being made a full corporal and then a sergeant.
Okay. Was there any advantage being a lance corporal? Did you get an increase in wages?
Oh yes, not much pennies, but the corporal was more money, and the sergeant of course was better money too. So it all helped, but it was very frugal. You know, it was all just a matter of a shilling or two that you got extra. But still, it was good, and you had also the authority of the rank too, and that was good for the training of the recruits. You know, and it all worked out. It was very sensible. I must say, the army was the way they did things. It was obvious that they worked in a close relationship with just a steady advantage, a steady success going on. And it paid off, there's no doubt about that.
Now, when you were a lance corporal, had you to take on any more responsibilities than what you'd already been doing as an instructor during your own basic training?
No, I had to carry out the training of the recruits. Carry that on right up to the time that they finished, and that was my responsibility. And out of that, they went off after they'd done the training, but I carried on training them right up to the time that they left. And then we waited for the next squad to come, so it was never ending, you know. And usually you might get a 3 or 4 days rest, you know, between the squads, but that was all you got.
And did you have any better accommodation now that you were a Lance Corporal?
No, not as Lance Corporal, nor a Corporal. In the huts, normally at Gordon Barracks at the time, there was annexes at the end of the hut at both ends, and that was where the NCOs went. So we get the Lance Corporal, the Corporal at one end, and the Corporal and maybe at another end if there was more instructors. But the accommodation was exactly the same as the soldier.
Okay.
With no change in that, no.
But was it a smaller room?
Smaller room, yes. Sorry.
So how many on average would you be sharing this room with?
Well, normally you'd another one, usually two in the annex. And there might be a one at the other end, or two, but that didn't happen until 1941 when more instructors were able to, you know, start training the recruits. So normally you just had two at the end. And then you were responsible for the discipline in the hut, you know, and quietness after lights out and all that sort of thing. So that was part of the discipline, of course.
And did you find it difficult now to be in that proper position of authority to then issue, discipline out to young soldiers?
Oh, no. it became quite easy to do because you were doing it every day. You know, and it was all the same thing, teaching and teaching all the time. And as each week went on, of course, you got better and better, and you saw the improvement in the men, and that was half the battle.
And when you were made corporal, had you any more instruction or anything to do then, you know, or any more studying for any more duties that you had to now undertake?
Yes, as you rose up in rank, you had a little bit more to do. Because you had to keep check of the Lance Corporals, help them on their way, and also to train in your own capacity as a corporal. And if the sergeant wasn't there, then you carried on, you took charge and carried on. So that gave you that little bit of more responsibility. But then it all transpired at night in the evenings when you did your homework. You just had to make the best of it.
And was there any, like, official manuals that you had to go through to become
yes.
a corporal?
Oh, well, there was a certain procedure to go through, and you had to do special written tests, you know, and that before you were promoted. You had to go through a promotion exam for whatever rank it was. And I had to do the Lance Corporal's promotion exam, followed by the corporals, and then by the sergeant. And even as a sergeant, you had to go through the drill scene just the same, yeah. But very fair. It was fair.
And was that all up at Gordon Barracks?
It was all at Gordon Barracks, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you became a sergeant. When did you become a sergeant again?
Sergeant was in 1942, in the spring of 1942. Yeah. January or February, I think it was, in 1942, I was promoted to sergeant.
And you'd had to work towards this qualification.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. And what were your responsibilities then?
Well, you had more. You were in charge of the platoon. You were the platoon commander, and you had to report to your whatever officer had been designated to check and to inspect and so forth. You had to report to him. But you were responsible for the training of the men in the platoon. And also for supervising the corporals and the lance corporals, and that were also instructing. So it all devolved on you to take charge of the platoon then as a sergeant.
Mm-hmm. And was there, you know how, like, if we compare it to the basic training that a soldier had, and when you compare a sergeant's role, was there any more complications with drilling or machinery, weapons training or anything that you had to do compared to, like, what a basic soldier had to do?
No, you just carried on exactly the same, and all you had to do was to ensure that the corporal and the lance corporal were also carrying out their proper duties too. You were responsible to them to see that they were teaching properly and training the men, but nothing changed. But you were now in overall responsibility of the platoon as a sergeant.
Okay. And the platoon, was that about 30 men? Is that what you said?
No, about 30 men usually, yes. Sorry.
Okay. Now, was there, what was the benefits to being a sergeant? Did you have a room to yourself or something?
Yes, that changed. You got a... There's a line of bunks, what they call bunks, in the very small space, about half the size of this room here, and that was your room.